Morning. Today's Avin Erevin Mem Zayin. We're Mem Vav Amud Beis. Really interesting Gemara yesterday in terms of Klalei Apsach. The Gemara told us that when you have Machlokas Tanayim, so in general, who do we follow like? And the Gemara creates a general pecking order in terms of which Tanayim are going to take a more dominant position in terms of the Halach Lamasa. So as far as the various opinions that we saw yesterday in the Gemara regarding Klalei Apsach, the Gemara puts Rav Yossi above everybody. First of all, we can go back to the Amud Aleph of yesterday. The Gemara taught us that when you have machloksim of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Rabbi Kiva, and they're arguing with a colleague, so then we're going to go like Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Rabbi Kiva over one colleague. If it's a yachid al yachid, if it's a one on one. If on the other hand it is Rabbi Yossi going against even a group of people, so we're going to follow like Rabbi Yossi. That was one klal that we learned yesterday. Another one was, what if I have a machlokes between Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Yehuda? We follow like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Meir? We follow like Rabbi Yossi. The what about Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Meir? We're going to follow like Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Meir in this construct, so Rabbi Meir is on the bottom. The what about Rabbi Shimon? So the Gemara says Rabbi Shimon also is towards the bottom. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, we're going to pass on like Rabbi Yehuda. So just a way to think about it, Rabbi Yossi, again, this is all just in terms of Klalei Apsach. Chas v'chalila, we're not ranking the Tanaim. We're just talking about how, in terms of how we paskin. So Rabbi Yossi is above everybody. Rabbi Yossi is above Rabbi Yehuda. He's certainly above Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is above Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Yehuda is above Rabbi Shimon. And as far as Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon are concerned, so what if it's machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon? So the Gemara says there, I don't know. That was a bit of a stalemate in terms of having a klal hapsak. That was all provided to us in the Gemara yesterday. That was brought in by a number of Tanaim. So Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Zrika, those were the Amoraim who brought in those klal hapsak. With that stated, the Gemara now is going to point out that not everyone necessarily supports this idea of the klal hapsak that we just offered over here. The Gemara now is going to turn its attention to Rav Meshasha. And for the first half of today's daf, really more than the first half of today's daf, we're going to see if these klal hapsak in fact do work. Meaning, we're going to go take a tour of Shas. We're going to go over a half dozen cases throughout Shas, and we're going to see whether or not the Amoraim necessarily subscribe to this idea of klal hapsak. So with that stated, we're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday with the words Amr Rav Misharshe Menvav Amud Beis, about two-thirds of the way down the Amud. First words of the line is Rabbi Shimon, my teku. Okay, Amr Rav Misharshe, lesnu lali klale. So Rav Misharshe says, I don't hold to these klalim, meaning we see clearly that the Amoraim do not necessarily subscribe to these klalim, and how do I know them? Menale, Rav Misharshe, how does he know that? Ilema mihadit nan. So here we begin. And so it's going to be more than a half dozen cases that we're going to go through Shas. So first case that we're going to go to is our very own Mishnah. So the Mishnah taught us, Rabbi Shimon Omer, L'ma'ad David Omer L'gimel Chatzir, S'psucha Zulazu, P'psucha Zulazu, Sarabim. So in our Mishnah, if you recall, so the Mishnah created a scenario in which you had three people in a row, each one of them only having Dala Amos, the most unusual circumstance. But that was the case in the Mishnah. So you had 1, 2, and 3, right, in terms of people, and they were in a row, they were lined up in a row, and each one of them had Dala Amos, and there was overlap between 1 and 2, and there was overlap between 2 and 3, but there was no overlap between 1 and 3. And so what the Mishnah taught us is that in the shared area of 1 and 2, they can eat together, in the shared area of 2 and 3, they can eat together, but 1 and 3 cannot eat together. Okay, good. Rabbi Shimon says, you know what it's like? It's just like, and he created the comparison. And we're learning the comparison right now. So, Lama HaDavadamah, what is that comparable to? So, it's comparable to three chatziris that are opened up one to another. Again, the three chatziris in a row. And they also open up to the same Rishos Rabim, right? So, they're lined up on the street. So, Irvu Shtayim HaChitzonos Ima Imtzayis, Himutar Simahem, Vehin Mutaros Ima, Vishtayim HaChitzonos Osros Ze Imze. So, Chatzir numbers 1 and 2 making an Erev between the two of them, uniting the two of them. You have also another Erev, a second Erev between 2 and 3, uniting the two of them. So it's the same thing. So you can bring items from Chatzir 1 to 2 and 2 to 1, and you can do the same thing from 2 to 3 and 3 to 2, but what you can't do is you can't bring an item from 1 to 3 because 1 and 3 are not united. Good. So this is the halacha according to Rabbi Shimon. The Amrav Chama Burger Yama Rav Halacha Ki Rabbi Shimon. So, and he says, and the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon. Man Paligala Rabbi Huda. Now, who's arguing with Rabbi Shimon? So it's Rabbi Huda over there in the Mishnah that argues on Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, so here we have it. So here we have an excellent example, a machlokus between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Huda, and the halacha is going to go like Rabbi Shimon, and that's going against the Klalei Apsak. Klalei Apsak informs us that the halacha should be following like Rabbi Huda. So this is going to be challenge number one. So the Gemara says, Va'amar Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon, halacha Rabbi Huda, elav shvamina leisnu. So you see clearly that the Amoraim do not subscribe to it. Now when we say Amoraim, if you look carefully over here, it's Amrav Chamar Berguri Amarav. So you see that's a premier Amora, it's Rav. So Rav is not holding by these Klalei Apsak, because over here he's saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, not like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, "Umay Kushya." Now this answer, we're going to get used to this answer, because we're going to hear this answer multiple times this morning. So Umay Kushya, Dama Hechad, Yidmar, Yidmar, Hechad, Lo Yidmar, Lo Yidmar. So the Gemara says, look, it's a general rule. And there are going to be exceptions, right? Earlier in the Masech, we talked about this idea, that when you have generalities, it's good. That's a general rule, but there are exceptions. And the exceptions will be noted. So when I don't have a notation, so then I'm going to default to the general rule. But when I don't have a notation, I'm sorry, but when there is a notation, so then we're going to follow the notation. So over here, take note that over here in this particular case, halacha follows like Rabbi Shimon, not like Rabbi Yehuda. And Rav had to go out of his way to say it. In fact, you can even argue in the other direction, meaning the fact that Rav had to go out of his way to say over here, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, not like Rabbi Yehuda. So that means that the default is that we follow like Rabbi Yehuda. It's not the greatest diuk. In other words, you needed to start with the general rule. Okay, but point being, however, is that this was a noted exception. Ella meha. So the Gemara says, okay, here we go now. Round two of Mishnayos that we Moraim do not seem to follow the Klalei Apsak. So Ella meha did not. So here we have a Mishnah. Mishnah is coming up later in the Masechta. We'll see it in approximately 2 weeks from today. And that is the Mishnah Yirshal Yachid. So you have a city that belongs to an individual. Okay. Later, when we do this Mishnah inside in its primary location, so we'll discuss it in more detail in terms of what's an Yirshal Yachid, what's an Yirshal Rabim. For the sake of brevity over here, I'm just going to offer one shot, and that is like Rashi. And then Yirshal Yachid means that there are not 600,000 people in the city. So that means the city is not a Rishus Rabim. And the Yirshal Rabim is when there are 600,000. Remember, Rashi already a couple times in Shas taught us that in order for an area to be a Rishus HaRabim, you need 600,000 people. Gemara never says it explicitly, but Rashi says it. Rashi says in Shabbos and in Erevin. And it's very easy to remember, because in both, in Shabbos and Erevin, there's Zan Davav. So Rashi writes that for a city to be a Rishus HaRabim, you need 600,000. So Ir Shal Yachid is when you didn't have 600,000. So Ir Shal Yachid Nasa Shal Rabim. Ma'arvin is Kula. So you can make an error for the whole city. No problem at all. And Shal Rabim and Nasa Shal Yachid. However, let's say it was an Ir Shal Rabim. Nasa Shal Rabim becomes a Rabim. So you can make an error for everything. Now, even within Rashi, again, we're going to discuss this later on. I don't want to spend too much time with it, but even according to Rashi, the Mishnah is a little bit challenging to understand, because once it becomes an Irshal Rabim, so now doesn't that mean it's a Rishus Rabim? And doesn't that mean now you can't make an Eruv? Okay, so when we get to this later, we'll discuss in more detail. The point is of this Mishnah, just focusing right now on the main point of the Mishnah, and that is that if it's an Irshal Yachid, that means people understand it to be, people think of it as an Irshal Yachid. It's principally... It's not a Rishus Rabim city. It's a Rishus Yachid city, if that makes sense. Meaning, I'll go back to saying it the first way. It's not a Rishus Rabim city. And so therefore, making an Erev won't confuse people. However, let's flip it around. But if it is Shal Rabim, Shal Rabim and Asa Shal Yachid, but let's say it's a Ir Shal Rabim, and then it becomes an Ir Shal Yachid. Okay, and according to Rashi, that means people moved out, and the population has dropped below 600,000. But because it started off as an Ir Shal Rabim, that means that it was principally looked at like an Ir Shal Rabim. So now it just confuses people. So you can make an error for the city, but you have to make an exclusion. That exclusion is going to inform people that you don't make a error for an area of a Rishus Rabim. It's just there to remind people that this is a constructed area for part of the city, but not for the whole city. How much of an exclusion are we talking about? So Ein Mer Arvin is Kula. You don't make an area for the entire city. Elaim Kein Oseh Chutzalah Kier Chadasha Shebi Yehuda Sheish Bachamishim Diyurim Divrei Yehuda. So it's a Machlokas Tanaim. What kind of exclusion do I need to make when the city was an Irshal Rabim, now becomes an Irshal Yachid, but still when you make an Erev, you can't make an Erev for the whole city, and you have to make an exclusion. How much of an exclusion are we talking about? Shitas Rav Yehuda? 50 families have to be excluded. Okay, I don't want to be there when that decision has to be made, which 50 families are going to be excluded from the Erev, but 50 families have to be excluded from the Erev. So Rabbi Shimon Omer, as we now turn to the top, Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, Shosh Chaser Shoshnei Batim. So he does not look at it in terms of number of residents, but rather a number of properties. So it's going to be three Chaseros are going to be excluded, and each of the Chaseros have to have minimum two houses. Okay, that is Shitas, Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing how much of an exclusion is necessary when you had an Irshal Rabim that converted to an Irshal Yachid, and you cannot make an error for the whole city, and you need to make an exclusion. How much are we talking about? Machlokas Tanayim. Good. Now, at this point in time, hopefully you know where we're headed. The Amr of Chama Bar Guri Amar Rav Halacha K'Rabbi Shimon. And here, a second time, we have a statement of Rav saying, the Halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon. Uman Palagala Rabbi Yehuda. Now, here in the Mishnah, it's very clear. The Bar Plukta of Rabbi Shimon is Rabbi Yehuda. So, the Ha Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Halacha K'Rabbi Yehuda. And once again, what happened to our Klalei Apsak? Rabbi Yehuda should trump Rabbi Shimon in Halacha. And meanwhile, over here, that didn't happen. Answers the Gemara, and again we're going to get used to this answer. To which the Gemara says again, this is a noted exception. Rav says, take note, this is different. So here we go now, round three. So the Gemara says, a Mishnah. Haminiach es beso, somebody who leaves his house. V'halach lishbos b'ir acheres. And he goes to another town for that particular Shabbos. And so now, generally speaking, when it comes to Erev Chatzeros, everyone has to be Mishtatev. Every Jew within the Erev has to make a contribution to the Erev in order to unify everybody so that we can carry from the homes into the Chatzer. So here, somebody leaves town for Shabbos. So, according to the first opinion, which we're going to see in just a moment, is Rebbe Meir. So if he leaves town, it doesn't matter who it is. So let's start again from the beginning of the Mishnah. Haminiach is based on Allah, who's supposed to be Erev Chatzeros. So, whether it be a non-Jew, whether it be a Jew, Oser Livnei Chatzeros, Div Rabbi Meir. Okay, please forgive me. According to Rabbi Meir, it is going to be prohibited when they go away for Shabbos. It doesn't matter whether it's Jew or whether it's a non-Jew. And Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Shitas, Rabbi Yehuda, is Eino Oser. Nope, it doesn't prohibit, meaning he went away for Shabbos. So, by virtue of the fact that he didn't make a contribution, that's not a big deal. He's not here. In other words, those that need to make a contribution to the Erev are only people that are residing here over Shabbos, but he's not here. And Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Rabbi Yossi says the following. So here, in this Mishnah, there are three of our principal Tanayim, in which we have Klalei Apsak. There's Rabbi Meir, there's Rabbi Yehuda, and now we're being introduced to Shitas Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Nachri Oser, Yisrael, Eino Oser. So he's going to make a distinction between a non-Jew and a Jew. Now, why is there such a distinction? Because, look, if the Jew goes away for Shabbos, he's not coming back. He can't come back on Shabbos, meaning his restriction of Tchum will prevent him from coming back on Shabbos. But when it comes to a non-Jew, so just because he went away doesn't mean he can't come back on Shabbos. In fact, there's a chance that he is going to come back on Shabbos. So Shitas Rabbi Yossi, is that a distinction to be drawn between Jew and non-Jew? For a Jew, so he's not going to come back. So therefore, his absence is not going to restrict the Eruv. On the other hand, if a non-Jew went away, his absence doesn't mean anything because he can come back. And so therefore, if he didn't make a contribution, so therefore, the Erev now is not a complete Erev. As an important aside, non-Jews don't make a contribution to an Erev. Meaning, if a non-Jew lives within the Chatzer, if he has a house that abuts the Chatzer, so he does not make a contribution, but rather you rent out space from him. A topic we're going to be discussing again later in the Masechta in much greater detail. So, but just to make that point clear right now, he's not contributing to the Eruv, but you're renting space from him, but it's the same basic issue. In other words, he's got rights and ownership in the Chatzer, and that has to be dealt with in order so that the Chatzer be unified. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, there's one more. And in this Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon says, "Afilu inech es beso." A person leaves his house for halach lishbo seitzol bito ba'osair, and he's going to spend Shabbos with his daughter. And even if his daughter lives in the same city, so eino oser. So Rabbi Shimon takes the most lenient position: is that going away for Shabbos could even mean you're going away even in the same city, but you're not living here in this house, this city, and you're going to your daughter. You'll be fine. Shekvar he siach daito, because at this point in time he had hesach hadas, meaning he basically mentally left his home. He's no longer considered for this Shabbos a owner of the Erev. In other words, we're not actually affecting, influencing ownership over here. Right? That's pretty self-evident. Just because you leave your home does not mean that you relinquish your home. It just simply means that vis-a-vis for the requirement of contributing to the Erev, so you are a non-factor, you're a non-entity vis-a-vis that requirement. And going away, says Rabbi Shimon, means even going away to your daughter, who even lives in the same city. Okay, so we have a Mishnah over here which presents four opinions in terms of what does vacancy mean vis-a-vis an Eruv, and ranging from the most machmir sheet of Rabbi Meir to the most lenient sheet of Rabbi Shimon. Now, who do we passing alike? So, again, without knowing anything, so you look at the four Tanaim, and by the way, these are the four principal Tanaim that we spoke about in yesterday's daf regarding the Klalei Apsak, and we should be following the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, right? So here we go, round three, and we all know what's coming. So the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. So umana palagala Rabbi. Now the Gemara says over here. Now in the our Gemara we have Reish Yud. So it could mean Rabbi Yossi. It could mean Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. The Gemara over here is assuming that like assuming Rabbi Yehuda, which is curious, and you'll see why we know that. In other words, it's not a guess. It's curious that the Gemara could have gone to Rabbi Yossi, meaning Rabbi Yossi trumps everybody. Rabbi Yossi trumps Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi trumps Rabbi Shimon. But it doesn't take away from the strength of the question, meaning because of the four Tanaim that we chose, so we chose one of the last that we should have chosen, meaning we chose Rabbi Shimon, and when I say we chose, I mean Rav. Rav chooses Rabbi Shimon, and in the very least, you should be choosing Rabbi Yehuda over Rabbi Shimon, and certainly Rabbi Yossi over Rabbi Shimon. But anyway, so Va'amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Alachik Rabbi Yehuda, and here's now where it's evident that we're talking about Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara says, but wait one second, if it's an option between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, so shouldn't we be going like Rabbi Yehuda, not like Rabbi Shimon? So again, the answer, so we could, at this point in time, we could say it by heart. My kishur de mahachanami hechad itmar, itmar, hechad lo itmar, noted exception. Rav went out of his way to say that the halacha over here follows like Rabbi Shimon. This is a noted exception. Elameha. So now, this is our fourth round. Did nine, we learned in a Mishnah. Vizesham ra'ani ma'arivir aglav. So this is a scenario where the ani, the poor person, is going to make his erev tchum, but he's going to do so with his legs. Meaning we go back to the topic that we discussed extensively in the third perek. It's going to come up over here in our perek as well. And that is, instead of using food, making an erev with your legs, which is less convenient, but just as effective, right? So it's going to be a machlokas amongst the Tanaim, whether it's going to be just as effective. So the ani is ma'ariv beraglav. So the ani makes an erev with his legs, meaning he's an ani, so he doesn't have a lot of means. So for him to put out two additional meals in order to make an erev tchum is going to be difficult. So for him, an exception is made where you can make an erev with your legs. And Rabbi Meir Omer, Anu ein lanu ella ella ani. And Rabbi Meir's position is only an ani can make an erev with his legs, meaning that this idea of making an erev just by simply walking to the place and spending ben hashmashos over there, that is only given towards the ani. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, echad ani vechad asher, lo amr mavram bepasel al hakel al ha asher, shelo yatzav yarev biraglav. Okay, and the Mishnah here introduces us to the Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, in terms of effectiveness, you can make an erev with food, you can make an erev with your legs, meaning you can walk to the place. Either one would be acceptable. The only reason why the Chachamim instituted making an erev with food is just out of convenience. In other words, instead of the wealthy person having to walk to that location, he could send food with somebody. That person will act on behalf of him as a shliach and establish a makom shisa with the food. That was a leniency provided for the Ashirim. But they're equally effective, and the idea of making an erev with your legs works for both an ani and for an Ashir, Shitas Rebbe Yehuda. Now the Gemara continues, so far we're setting ourselves up, and the following, when the Mishnah was said over by Rebbe Chia Bar Ashi, in front of Chia Bar Rav, in front of Rav, so Echad Ani ve'Echad Ashir, so he said, whether it's an ani, whether it's an Ashir, meaning he's saying over the Mishnah. So, and Rav says, good, you're saying over the Mishnah, great. But now I want you to add. I don't believe Rav is adding to the Mishnah. It's just simply a notation after the Mishnah. And that is, halachik Rabbi Yehuda. and make sure that people know that in this regard, the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. Okay. Now, here, the question is going to be a little bit different than the way we've been expressing it up until now. Up until now, Rav has been saying the halacha follows like the Tana that we don't normally follow. Here, the problem is that Rav is going out of his way that when you're saying over the Mishnah, make sure to say over that the halacha follows like Rav Yehuda. Which, over here, it's a machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. And we know that Rav Yehuda goes over Rav Meir. So over here, for Rav to say, and the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda, so this is information we know already. So this is not a noted exception, this is the klal. And since this is the klal, so that means to say that it was unnecessary for Rav to punctuate the Mishnah by saying, oh, by the way, the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. So Tarti Lamali. Now comes out that Rav is being redundant. So Vama Rav Meir Rav Yehuda halacha k'Rav Yehuda. And didn't we already establish that a machlokes between the Tanaim, we're going to follow like Rav Yehuda, that's the default. Why did Rav have to say in the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda? Well, my kushya doma Rav leis lehani klali. So the Gemara says, okay, so the Gemara concedes the point. So maybe Rav doesn't hold to these klalim. So the Gemara says, fine. So in general, other Amoraim hold to the klal, but Rav doesn't hold to the klal. So elamehad did not. So the Gemara says, okay. So why don't we consider now the following? This is round 5. So Dinan HaYavama. So over here, we're talking about a Yavama, which means that she is Rachmana, she's a widow. She has a surviving brother-in-law. Her husband died, her husband left a brother. So she has a surviving brother-in-law who has the mitzvah of either Yibam or Chalitza. So Lo Sachlos Velosis Yabem Ashiu La Shlosha Chadashim. So here in this Mishnah in Yavamos, we're talking about the idea of Havchana, that we need to establish paternity. In general, we need to establish paternity. The Gemara tells us, but specifically over here, it becomes even more critical to establish paternity, because consider, if the baby that she has, not so long after she is widowed, if let's say she had a baby 9 months after she was widowed, so it's very possible now, well, if let's not introduce another person. If let's say she had a baby 9 months after she was widowed, or shortly there, within 9 months after she was widowed, so now we know that she had a baby from her first husband. What does that tell us regarding the mitzvah of Yibam? There is no mitzvah of Yibam. The mitzvah of Yibam only exists when there's no child. But if there's a child, so then there's no mitzvah of Yibam. Now, if there's no mitzvah of Yibam, so her brother-in-law not only cannot do the mitzvah of Yibam, doesn't have the mitzvah of Yibam, but is prohibited from being with her now, because now it's a shesach. Okay, if everything I said just went a little too quickly, when we get back to Yavamos, we'll slow it down and we'll understand it much better. But in the meantime, however, so you need to establish paternity over here. Over here, it becomes even more significant to establish paternity, because otherwise you're looking at a potential Isra of Eshesach. So how do we establish paternity? It's very simple. So after she is widowed, she has to wait 3 months before we can even entertain the idea of Yibam. Why? What's 3 months? 3 months hooker ubra. So we're going to know by 3 months whether she's pregnant or she's not pregnant. Already she'll be showing within 3 months. The Gemara says there's a number of places. Fine. She has to wait 3 months. And this is not just limited to the Yavama and her brother-in-law. This is true across the board. Meaning even if Yibam is not an issue, but the general idea of establishing paternity, that is an important concept. The Gemara, obviously over here, we're not discussing in any kind of depth or detail. Over here, we're just bringing in the Mishnah just to highlight the idea of Klalei Apsak. But the Gemara elsewhere talks about the importance, how significant it is to establish paternity. The Gemara elsewhere says that the Shekhinah is only Sharui, only when you have Yichus, meaning when you know who the father is, so there's more Hashras HaShekhinah. Anyway, so according to the Mishnah, so in order to establish paternity, you're going to always have to wait 3 months, and it doesn't matter how the marriage ended and in what stage of the marriage ended. So Echa Besulos Ve'Echa Be'ulos, whether or not she was widowed as a Besula, meaning she was not intimate with her first husband, or Be'ula, or she was intimate. Obviously, there's a concern. Echad Amanos Ve'Echad Gerushos, whether she's a widow, whether she's a divorcee. Echad Arusos Ve'Echad Nesuos. And it doesn't matter what stage of marriage she was with her first husband. If, let's say, they only were the first stage of marriage of Erisin, and then she was widowed or divorced, so under those circumstances, there was no intimacy between the two of them. There shouldn't be a need to wait 3 months. But according to the first opinion of this Mishnah, So still, you're going to wait 3 months. Meaning, once the Chachamim instituted Havchana, so then you're going to wait 3 months, period. With no exceptions. Rav Yehuda Omer Nesus Yisarsu V'Arusus Yenasu Chutz Me Arusus Shabi Yehuda Memeshalibo Gasba. And now introduce two shitas Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, well, if the first marriage ended in Erusin, let me go in the order of Rav Yehuda. If the first marriage ended in Nisuin, which means that she was intimate with her first husband, so then Yisarsu. So then she could do Erusin within 3 months to her second husband. And that would be because Erusin, there's no intimacy between her and her second husband. The intimacy only occurs at the second stage of marriage, at Nisuin. So to do Erusin within 3 months is fine. And the converse is also true. The Arusos Yinasu. And if the woman terminated her first marriage with Erusin, which means that she was not intimate with her first husband, so now she can get married to her second husband within 3 months. There's no need to wait 3 months. Chutz me'arusa shebi Yehuda mimnei shelibo gaspa. With noted exception to Erusin in the province of Yehuda. The Gemara in Ksuvas tells us, the Mishnah in Ksuvas tells us, that when it comes to Erusin in the province of Yehuda, so they were intimate with one another. When we get to Ksuvas, we'll discuss that in much greater detail. But anyway, so obviously now that we know that they were intimate during the stage of Erusin in the province of Yehuda, so now obviously if for whatever reason that marriage terminates and she's now going to her next marriage, she has to wait 3 months in order to establish paternity. Rabbi Yossi Omer, here we are now in the Mishnah. So kol anashim yisarsu chutz min almana. So every woman could do Erusin with exception to the widow, mimnei ha'ibo, because there's a consideration of avelus. She's a widow, which means that she's an avelus. So for there has to be a waiting period. Okay, now, this Mishnah from Yevamos, so the Gemara says, V'amrinan Rebbe El-Azar. Now the Amora, Rebbe El-Azar, says the following. Lo ala be medrasha. So he doesn't say, actually, it comes in the way of an anecdote, and that is that he didn't attend the Beis Medrash. Ashkechei li Rebbe Asa dahave ka'im. So he saw Rebbe Asi that was standing there. Amalei my amar bebe medrasha. And the question is very simple. Nu, what did they say in the Beis Medrash? Amalei hachi amar Rebbe Yochanan halacha ke Rebbe Yossi. So he says that the halacha in fact follows like Rebbe Yossi. So, michlal, implicit in that is the yechida palig aleha. So he says, okay, that's interesting. That means that what? An individual is arguing with him? So he says, in. He says, that's correct, yeah. An individual is arguing with Rebbe Yossi. And how do I know that? Based on other pieces of information, a brisa. The Gemara quotes the brisa. V'atanya arish aisa redufa leilech lebeis avia. So Rachmanus, the marriage is not good. She's constantly running to her father's house. And she's so unhappy in the marriage. O shahayala ka'as imba'ala. Or unfortunately, the anger is bubbling over so much in the house, everybody knows that they're fighting. O shayabala zakein, or her husband is old. O chalei, or he's sick. O shaisa, he chola. Or she's sick, akara, or she is incapable of having children, zikena, or she is old, kitana, or she is a minor, vailonis, or she's a woman who just simply does not have the reproductive tools in order to be able to have a baby, vishena ruuya lele, or for whatever reason, she just simply can't have a baby, oshaya bala chavush bevesar surin, or her husband is in jail, or hamapelsa achamisas bala, or she miscarries after her husband has died. Okay, and you get the idea with all these cases that we just described, there's no need to wait 3 months. Paternity is not going to come into question in all these cases over here, either because of a lack of intimacy or because of incapability of intimacy or because of her inability to have children. Whatever the case is, in all the above cases, so there's not going to be a question of paternity. So you're going to always have to wait 3 months. And over here, what are we getting in this brisa? So this is the same opinion that was recorded in the mission that we learn, but we establish over here in the brisa is that first opinion belongs to Rebbe Meir. And now Rebbe Yossi matir le'ares ulinasa miyad, and Rebbe Yossi in all these cases says that she can get married immediately because once we know that there's no issue of paternity, so therefore she does not have to wait the 3 months. So now, lamali, v'hamar Rebbe Meir v'Rebbe Yossi alacha k'Rebbe Yossi. So the Gemara says, okay, now, I'm not quite following over here. Klali Apsak would tell us that the halacha should follow like Rebbe Yossi. And so over here, you need to quote a brisa to establish that this is Rebbe Meir who is arguing with Rebbe Yossi. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Even if that weren't the case, the halacha is going to follow like Rebbe Yossi. So Umay Kusha, the Gemara says, okay, but I'm not bothered over here by that because Diomal Afuke mid Rav Nachman Amashmo. So the Gemara says, but over here it could very well be that the reason why we have to go out of our way to say that the halacha falsik Rav Yosi in this case is because other Amorai made other statements. Damar halachik Rabbi Meir b'gzerasav, and notably the statement of Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel says that when Rav Meir makes a statement regarding gzeros, so we follow Rabbi Meir with his gzeros. And over here, this is Rav Meir, and this is a gzera. A woman always has to wait 3 months, even in a situation where it's not going to be a question of paternity, but a woman also always has to wait 3 months. Rav Meir will say, yeah. In other words, we just simply want all women to wait 3 months as part of a gzera that was instituted by the Chachamim, even in a case where we're not questioning the paternity. There's no need to question the paternity. So what we see over here is that we have Rav Meir, and we have a gzera of Rav Meir, and we have a statement of Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel that says that when Rav Meir makes a gzera, we follow Rav Meir. So now we have competing rules. One rule is that we follow the gzera of Meir. Another rule is that Rav Yosi, Rav Meir, the halacha is like Rav Yosi. So now that we have competing rules, now we have to go out of our way over here to say that the halacha falls like Rav Yosi. Without an explicit statement over here, we would just simply be locked between these competing rules, and we wouldn't know which way to go. Okay, I'm going to pause for a moment just to breathe. Elamiha. The Gemara now is going to give us another scenario in which, once again, we have a Mishnah, a machlokus between these Tanayim, and why don't we just simply fall back on our Klalei Apsak. Noted exception over here, this is now round six. Noted exception over here is that this is not a Mishnah, but rather this is a Braisa. Elamiha detanya will enter the Braisa, ochenly read, shel nachrim velochim mehem. A person can go to a Yerid of Nachrim. Now, Yerid is not just a market, but rather it's a festival. And not only is it a festival, but it's a festival for Avodah Zarah. Take a look at Rashi over here, four lines. Now, three lines from the bottom of the Amud. Rashi writes, Shuk Hanikva L'Yom Chag Sha'ovdi Kochavim. So it's a pagan festival. And so, really, in principle, you shouldn't even be there. In other words, the market itself, obviously, more than acceptable. But this Yerid, which is a pagan festival, so this is now you're going to be surrounded by Avodah Zarah. V'lochim mehem. And you're going in there for the purposes of business. So under those circumstances, the Braisa tells us it would be okay. And we'll explain why in just a moment. Let's just go back to the Braisa. Hochen l'rishel nachrim. V'lochim mehem. And you're making purchases. You're purchasing behemas, avadim, shvachos, batim, sados, kramim. So you can buy animals and slaves, male and female, houses, fields, vineyards, v'kosev umala ba'arkos shalahem. And even if it means that we're going to go to courts in order to write up the proper documents and have them notarized and whatever legal mechanisms they had back in the day, mimneshu kematzil miyadan, because over here you're making significant purchases. And let's take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi writes, behema avadim v'shvachos mimnei shemachnisim lekedusha. What an interesting Rashi. Rashi says that you're elevating them in kedusha. Probably what Rashi means is that when it comes to an animal, now the animal is going to have to be a Shomer Shabbos. Now, if you're with me for Masechta Shabbos, you know exactly what I mean by that. Meaning to say that the owner of the animal now has an Isser Shvisas Behemto. So obviously for the animal himself, the animal is not credited for being Shomer Shabbos, stories aside, but rather now the animal is now owned by a Jew, so the animal is going to be enjoying Shabbos. The owner cannot work the animal on Shabbos. And when it comes to Avadim Shvachos, same explanation. Meaning an Eved and a Shifcha owned by a Jew, so they also need now to be Shomer Shabbos. So that's an elevation. So that's why, even though going to the Yerid in of itself is something that is frowned upon, but over here it is going to be mitigated by the fact that you are making a purchase, animals of Avadim Shvachos, and giving them an elevation in Kedusha. V'ima Yakoin. Now, if you are a Kohen, Metame B'chutz Aretz, Ladun ula er imahen. And if it means that as a Kohen, and in order to litigate, so it means that you're going to have to go leave Eretz Yisrael, so that's okay. Meaning, again, under normal circumstances, shouldn't leave Eretz Yisrael. Leaving Eretz Yisrael in of itself. Okay, I feel uncomfortable even talking about it as I live outside of Eretz Yisrael, but leaving Eretz Yisrael in of itself. And two, is tumas Eretz Amim. Meaning, anytime you step foot outside of Eretz Yisrael, the gzera derabanan, of Tumah in Chutz Aretz, and so for that, the Kohen shouldn't be leaving Eretz Yisrael. But for the purposes of litigation and establishing his ownership of an item, so for that, he's allowed to go. U'kishem shematame b'chutz aretz, kach matame b'veis ha'kvaris. And the Braisa goes on. not only can he go into Chutzarts, which is Tumah Derabanan, he can even go into a cemetery. To which immediately you're going to expect and get a reaction of the Gemara. Go to a cemetery, Beis HaKvaros, Sakadacha Tumah Daraisahi. No, that can't be. Going to a cemetery is an Issa Daraisa. So just to establish ownership of an item is not going to override a Tumah Daraisa, an Issa Daraisa for a Kohen. So Ela Beis HaPras, Derabanan. Okay, so we're not talking about a cemetery, we're talking about a Beis HaPras, which we talk about extensively throughout Shas. It is a Tumah Derabanan on a field. Umitam Elisa Isha. Also, other reasons why a Kohen would be allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael, even though he's going to go into Chutz Aretz and Tumas Amim. So let's say it is to get married, right? And Mitzvah Daraisa. Either the Mitzvah Daraisa is a marriage, the Mitzvah Daraisa is to have children, however you want to say it, Machlokas HaRishonim. But the point is, however, is that that is going to be able to override Tumas Amim. Velumo Torah. And if, let's say, he's not finding, well, we'll get to the success in just a moment. But let's right now say it simple. He needs a yeshiva. And the yeshiva right now exists outside of Eretz Yisrael. Fine. So despite the fact that going into Chutz Aretz would violate a Tumah Derabanan, but if the counter pressure is learning Torah in a yeshiva, so you go to yeshiva and learn Torah. So Am Rabbi Yehuda Imasab is manchain moti lomod ava moti lomod lo yitama. Now Rabbi Yehuda says, and now of course take note, in that this is Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that that's only if there's nowhere to learn in Eretz Yisrael, but if there's somewhere to learn in Eretz Yisrael, so then don't leave Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yossi Omer, as we are now in the last line of the Amud Aleph, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afizman Shemotzilum Onam Yitame. Nah, even if there's someone to learn in Eretz Yisrael, this coin is allowed to go to Chutzarets to learn in Chutzarets. Lefi, top of the Amud Beis, Lefi She'en Min HaKol Zocha Adam Lumod. Because as far as learning is concerned, learning requires a shidduch, it requires a match. Just because somebody knows Torah does not necessarily mean that he's going to be a good Rebbe for you. So the Rebbe for you is someone that speaks to you and that interests you. And so in the scenario in which you have a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, but you have a better one, you have one that just simply appeals to you more in Chutz Aretz, so even under those circumstances, you're going to go to Chutz Aretz. Ve'amar Rav Yossi, Maisa B'Yosef HaKohen Shalach, Eitzel Rabba, Letzidon Lama Torah. And Rav Yossi says, Maisa Shahaya, where Yosef HaKohen goes to Tzidon in order to learn by his Rebbe. Obviously, he's a Kohen. I get that by the name. So and he's leaving Eretz Yisrael in order to learn. Rav Yossi says, good. So now, case study. You see clearly over here that this is allowed. Ad kan divrei habraisa. What do we have in this braisa? Machlokes between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda. So far, so good. Okay, at this point in time, we are fully expecting what's coming up ahead. V'am Rav Yochanan halacha ki Rav Yossi. And Rav Yochanan says the halacha follows like Rav Yossi over here. So v'lama li v'am Rav Yehuda v'Rav Yossi halacha ki Rav Yossi. The statement of Rav Yochanan is unnecessary. Now, going back to the Klalei Apsak, in the Klalei Apsak we learned together that we knew this already. The default is that we're following Rav Yossi over Rav Yehuda. So over here, why did Rav Yochanan have to go out of his way to say that? Over here, the halacha is falling like Rav Yossi. Amar abayitz derichzakadav kamina hani milibib masnisen. So explains Abaye that yes, we have klalei apsak. I would have thought that klalei apsak is only going to be limited to Mishnayos. Mishnayos are authoritative and accepted and mekubal. And so I would have thought that once we have these rules, but these rules are for those things which are authoritative and mekubal like Mishnayos. Brises, on the other hand, Zaval Bebrisa Imalo, I would have thought no. Brises are not as authoritative as we see time and again throughout Chas. Brises sometimes need extra editing. Sometimes the Brises are just simply thrown out of the base measures. Right? In fact, the word Brisa, it's built into the word itself. The word Brisa comes from the word Barab, which means outside, exterior, meaning Brises are not as authoritative. Obviously, they carry a lot of weight, but not as authoritative as Mishnayos. I would have thought maybe the Klalei Apsak don't apply to Braisos. Kamash Malan. So Ella Hachi Kamar Hani Klalei Lav Divrei Hakol Nenu Daharav Leisle Hani Klalei. So now to wrap up our very first long sugya of today's daf. So now we're going to go all the way back to Rav Misharsha's statement. Rav Misharsha says we don't hold of these klalim. So now, after doing a pretty exhaustive search throughout Shas, so and seeing the reactions of various Amarayim, so finally we get to say that what all of Rav Misharsha meant is that Rav does not hold to these klalim. meaning other Amoraim do in fact hold of these Klalim, but we see that Rav does not hold of these Klalim. Okay, so over the course of our tour of Shas, we saw a number of times Rav having to go out of his way to say that the halacha falls like, in the cases where he said the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon, so that's an exception, so that's a noted exception. Like, that didn't bother us at all, because you have to state the exceptions. But in a case where Rav made a statement that the halacha falls like Rabbi Yehuda, when it was Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Shimon, or the halacha falls like Rabbi Yossi, so in those cases, so that's redundant, so the Gemara says fine. So we can conclude that Rav does not hold of these klalei apsak, but that's it. Meaning, as far as other Amoraim concerned, they do hold of the klalei apsak. Okay, so that was a lot of work, but in the course of going through the first Amud, just think about the number of Mishnayos that we were able to go over, how many Yediyos we had to go over in just one Amud of Shas. Okay, but the conclusion is the Klalei Psak are accepted, just not by everybody, notably Rav. I'm Rav Yoram Shmuel. Here we go with our second sugya of this morning, Mem Zayin Amud Beis, about 10 lines from the top of the Amud, beginning of the line, after the two dots. And next discussion is going to be the following. In our Mishnah, just a brief introduction. So we saw, in terms of acquiring a Makom Shvisa, a debate between the Chacham and Rav Yochanan ben Uri regarding a sleeping individual. Sleeping individual, where he's asleep during the Ben Hashemeshos period, is he going to be called a Makom Shvisa? And that is Machlokes Hatanayim. So the Chacham say that he's not going to be called a Makom Shvisa because he has to be awake and aware and alert. Being called a Makom Shvisa requires a Kinyan. Being a Kinyan means being awake and being conscious. Over here, he's not. Fine. So he's not going to be able to kone makom shvisa, which means according to the Chachamim, he is stuck. He only has four amos. Meanwhile, Shitas Rav Yochanan ben Uri is that he is kone makom shvisa, and he does acquire his 2,000 amos in every direction. And as we learned in the Gemara, not only is Rav Yochanan ben Uri's position going to be true regarding a sleeping individual, the same thing is going to be true regarding a keli. An ownerless keli also is going to acquire its makom shvisa, it's inanimate. It's not the same as a sleeping person. Good, that's true. But the Gemara's conclusion is that according to Rav Yochanan ben Uri, it's not just limited to a sleeping person. It'd also be true by Keli as well. It will acquire its Makom Shvisa. Good. That is, and the halacha falls like Rav Yochanan ben Uri, as we have already established, which got us into the long Gemara regarding Klalei Apsak. Now, we're going to advance the discussion one step. What about items that were owned by a guy on the onset of Shabbos? And then that item was transferred over to a Jew. I know Kinyanim on Shabbos is an issue. Lent to a Jew on Shabbos. Okay, but the point is that going into Shabbos, it was owned by a guy. And so is this item going to be Kona Makom Shvisa? Good. That's the next step of our discussion. So Amar Rav Yudah Mishmol Cheftei Nachri Ein Konim Shvisa. So Cheftei Nachri are not going to acquire a Makom Shvisa. Now, this statement to Rav Yudah Mishmol. So whose Tana did he start off following? Leman. That's the Gemara's question. Ilem le Rabbanim Pshita Hasha Chefzei Hefker Deleis Lehu Balim Ein Konim Shvisa Chefzei Hanachri Deis Le Balim Mi Baye. So the Gemara says, well, let's first start off with the Shita of the Chachamim. For the Chachamim, if something that is ownerless cannot acquire a Makom Shvisa, something that's owned by a guy shouldn't even be a discussion. Of course, it's not going to be Kone a Makom Shvisa. So it's even more ineligible to be Kona Makom Shvisa because the owner right now is a goy who doesn't subscribe to Shabbos, who can't subscribe to Shabbos. And so therefore, an item owned by a goy certainly is not going to have a Makom Shvisa according to the Shita of the Chachamim. So Ella Aliba de Rav Yochanan ben Uri. So he's subscribing to the Shita of Rav Yochanan ben Uri, V'kamash Malan. Ema Damer Rav Yochanan ben Uri Konim Shvisa. And we're saying the following. That when is Rav Yochanan ben Uri say that something acquires a Makom Shvisa? Hani milichefte hefker deleis lubalim. That's talking about an ownerless item. An ownerless item, so it does not have an owner. So therefore, no one is there to put its tchum on the item. So therefore, according to Rav Yochanan ben Uri, it can now acquire its own tchum. However, avachefte anachri deis lubalim lo. But if I have something that's owned by a non-Jew, where now it obviously is going to follow its owner. Its owner does not have a Makom Shvisa. Its owner is not Jewish and is not chayiv in Shabbos. And so its owner is not going to have a Makom Shvisa. Certainly the item that this Nachri owns also is not going to have a Makom Shvisa. Okay, so the statement to Rav Yoram Shmuel is that Chefzei Nachri are not going to be Kona Makom Shvisa, which, by the way, means that when you, the Jew, receive this item on Shabbos, so this item now is going to be following your Makom Shvisa, because now this item now is, it's a first opportunity where it is even a candidate to get a Makom Shvisa. Okay, but the point is that this item is not going to be bound by where it started off or where the guy started off going into Shabbos. Meisvei, the Gemara says, okay, but I'm going to challenge you based on the following. Brisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Hashol kli min anachri biyamtov, v'chein amashol lo linachri kli me'erav yamtov, v'yechzir lo biyamtov. So different scenarios in which the kli is owned by the guy on during the Banish Rosh's period. Scenario number one is that simply it belongs to the guy and you borrowed it on yamtov. Remember, we're talking about tchum. Tchum is as equal an issue on yamtov as it is on Shabbos. So you borrowed it from the guy. On Yontiv. Or, alternatively, a second case, where the item belonged to you, you lent it to the guy for Shabbos. Interesting over here. It's not owned by the guy, he's just simply the borrower. But because he borrowed it at the onset of Yontiv, so now it is not going to take on the tchum of its owner. Okay, so just as an interesting aside, so when you're a show, when you're a borrower, so that's going to influence, that will inform us what is going to be the tchum of the item that you're currently borrowing. So v'hakelim v'ha'otzros. I'm sorry. Let me just finish my sentence. And what happens is that on Yontif itself, it was returned back to the Jew. But during the Banish Rosh's period, the owner, I'm putting that in quotes right now, the owner is the guy. So now, yeshlam apay mama, lichol ruach. So it's going to have 2,000 amas in every direction. Meaning to say, that it acquires its makom shvisa. And if a non-Jew brings in fruit from outside of Tchum, so you can't move them because these items were now brought in from outside of Tchum and they were Kone Makom Shvisa. Outside, in other words, outside of Tchum, and as we learned already in the beginning of the Perek, once you started off out, within a Tchum and you were taken outside of Tchum, so then you cannot be moved more than four amas. Now, so we have a problem because this brisa clearly is working with the assumption that an item owned by a non-Jew going into Yontif, or for that matter Shabbos, is in fact going to be Kona Makom Shvisa. The item will be Kona Makom Shvisa. Now, here's the problem. We said that according to Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, an item owned by a non-Jew is not going to be Kona Makom Shvisa. And this is according to both the Shita of the Chachamim and according to Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Now we have this Braisa that we just learned together. And who is the author of it? Right now the answer is, awkwardly, nobody. Nobody's the author of it. And exactly as the Gemara articulates. And so if we're assuming, like Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that nobody says that Chefsei Nachri acquire a Makom Shvisa, we just learned a brisa that it does, and this brisa is authored by neither the Chachamim nor Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, can't be. So La'olam Kesav Rav Yochanan ben Nuri Chefsei Nachri Konem Shvisa. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to say now that according to Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, Chefsei Nachri do in fact Konem Shvisa. Ushmol Da'amar Kirabanan. And as far as Shmuel's statement is concerned, Shmuel was operating within the Shita of the Chachamim. Now, the Udikamar, now that bothered us a little bit because L'Rabbanan, Pshita. Now, if Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel is passing like the Chachamim, and now he's just simply adding a point that according to the Chachamim, not only are ownerless items not going to acquire Makom Shvisa, but neither are items owned by a non-Jew, that seems to be an obvious point. So the Gemara says, no, Ma'od Detem, Gzera Balam Denachri, Ato Balam Disrael, Kamash Malan. The Gemara says, it's not so obvious. Because consider, when you have an ownerless item, so it has no external influence, it doesn't have an external owner. But when I have an item owned by a non-Jew, so albeit that the non-Jewish owner is not subject to Shabbos, and not subject to Tchum Shabbos, but it is an owner, and so if you get into the habit of, and you get into this mindset, that items owned by a non-Jew do not have a Makom Shvisa, so then I'm going to get confused. Non-Jewish owner, Jewish owner, what's the difference? I mean, the difference is kind of obvious, but still, once you get into this mindset, you're going to get confused. So what you could have argued is that based on this, so what the Chachamim made is a gzera, general gzera, that we are not, that any item that's owned is going to acquire Makom Shvisa, even an item owned by a non-Jew. I'm sorry, that's the Havamina. The Maskana is no. That we're going to make it the distinction between an item owned by a Jew versus an item owned by a non-Jew. Item owned by a Jew, obviously subject to Tchum. and Makam Shri, so item owned by a non-Jew, is not going to be subject to, and not going to have a tchum, and not going to have a makom shlisa, and I would have thought otherwise, we would have had a havamina otherwise. Maskana is that no. Okay. And that havamina that we just had, that the chachamim made gzera, an item owned by a non-Jew is going to be subject to the tchum of its non-Jewish owner, so not only is that a havamina, but as we're about to see right now, that is an opinion. Reb Chiya bar Avin Amar Reb Yochanan, Reb Chiya bar Avin quotes the name Reb Yochanan, Chesed Nachri, Konim Shvisa. Gzera Balam Denachri, Atu Balam Deisrael. So an item owned by a non-Jew is in fact going to have a Makam Shvisa. Why? Mishum Gzera. Because we want people to get into the mindset that when an item is owned, so the item is going to follow the tchum of its owner. Now by a Jew, that's correct. That's the halacha. By a non-Jew, so min haTorah, that's not the halacha. But again, we want to get people in that mindset. So therefore, the chacham made a gzera. And the gzera is that when an item is owned by a non-Jew, so the item is going to follow the tchum of its non-Jewish owner through a gzera derabbanan. We're going to start over here, Hani Dichri. We're going to start tomorrow with a Maaseh Shehayah and a Psak Halacha. Okay, so let us recap our morning. Okay, in terms of summary, it's an easy daf to summarize. We start off this morning by noting, after having learned yesterday the Klalei HaPsak of whose positions do we follow, so Rav Misharsha said, I don't think we follow like these rules, and he cited, if my count is correct, six different cases throughout Shas where we have Mishnayos and Machlokas between our principal participants of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, and we know who to follow, meaning based on the Klalei HaPsak, and in all these instances, we had Amoraim say, here we fall like him, and here we fall like him, and why don't we just simply have the Klalei HaPsak? And sometimes, by the way, as we saw in the first half of today's daf, so the rulings that were issued by the Amoraim went against the Klalei HaPsak. Okay, so after a lengthy discussion and in a sentence summarizing the entirety of Amud Aleph and even some of Amud Beis, so noted exceptions, and even when not noted exceptions, even when totally disagreeing with the Klalei HaPsak, When all said and done, we can only say that Rav does not agree to the Klalei HaPsak, but other Amoraim in general do subscribe and accept the Klalei HaPsak. Second topic for this morning was Cheftei Nachri. I have an item owned by a non-Jew going into Shabbos during the Beinas Rashas period. Is he going to acquire his Makom Shvisa, Machlokis Amoraim? Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says that the item is not going to be called a Makom Shvisa, which means that once it is then transferred to a Jew on Shabbos, it will follow the Tchum of the of the Jew. That is Shitas Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. A discussion in the Gemara, is this operating within the sheet of the Chachamim, or is it operating within the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri? Fine. A discussion in the Gemara. The other opinion, which we just introduced ourselves to, is the opinion of Rabbi Chiya bar Avin in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that Cheftei Nachri are in fact going to be Konei Makom Shvisa. The owner is a non-Jew, doesn't subscribe to Shabbos. What are we doing over there? Chachamim made Gzera. The Chachamim wanted us to get into a mindset that when an item is owned by a person, so the item is going to subscribe to the tchum of its owner, even if that owner is not Jewish, and even though there is no subscription. But nevertheless, with the Chachamim want us to get us into that mindset as Gzera Derabbanan, so an item owned by anyone, even Jew or non-Jew, is going to subscribe to the tchum of its owner.